Hello and welcome to the Mobility Podcast. I'm Greg Rogers with Securing America's Future Energy, and I am joined by my wonderful co-hosts.
I'm Greg Rodriguez with Best Best and Krieger, and Pete Gould with Shared Mobility Strategies.
Was there a star at the end of your statement, Greg?
There's always an asterisk that the views are our own.
All right, great. So we are recording on a beautiful, beautiful fall Friday in Washington. And we're here to talk to you about Automated Vehicles 3.0, the latest guidance document released by USDOT pertaining to automated vehicles. We'll also have a little bit of an update on the Senate Autonomous Vehicle Bill, AV Start, at the end. So let's get right into it. This was a highly anticipated document in the wonk community for automation. Automated Vehicles 3.0 is the latest annual iteration from USDOT that describes how the department is looking at automated vehicles, how they're going to apply the existing regulations and potential regulations and best practices and lessons learned from previous AV pilots to ensure that automated vehicles are continuing to deploy safely, effectively, and efficiently is the objective. So at the release event, I believe this was on Thursday, October 4th, Secretary Elaine Chao and some of the modal administrators from across USDOT spoke at the event, including Deputy Administrator Heidi King, who is effectively acting administrator of NHTSA. We also had Raymond Martinez, who is the FMCSA, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. He is the administrator of that, which handles all trucks and buses, and a number of other folks, including Finch Fulton, Assistant Deputy Secretary of Transportation, who handled a lot of what happened with Automated Vehicles 3.0. I think first, what were you guys' initial impressions, and then we'll jump into like what some of the comments were.
Sure. I think it was good to see them kind of taking this at a holistic approach. You know, I think that the 2.0 was, I think by design, even a more stripped down version of 1.0. So this is, I think, a good natural progression there. And it really does start diving into things like pilots and things like, okay, this is really happening. What types of exemptions are we talking mm-hmm. about? I was interested, I think, and we can get into this a little later, the transit section was thinner than mm-hmm. I had kind of expected, maybe. And I would say those were kind of my big ones. Obviously, everyone's freaking out about the proving grounds. I'm not sure right. that really changes anything, but that was, you know, I think another thing that was a real noticeable. But more mm-hmm. than anything, I think my big takeaway, and Greg, I think, will agree, is that we're all going to be very busy submitting comments over the next few months.
Yeah, got a work cut out for us.
I think that's right. And so Greg Rogers and myself were able to attend event live. I think it was a good event in that it was nice to see all the different agencies within USDOT there. And mm-hmm. that's something that I appreciate seeing in, you know, Automated Vehicles 3.0 is that it says that we're all working together towards the same goal.
It's this concept of one USDOT.
Right, which was good. And that's something that a lot of us raised in comments we submitted to the recent request for comments related to the barriers around automation. I mean, that's something that in the comments we submitted on behalf of National League of Cities and a couple of other large national organizations is, why are we doing 4 or 5 different requests for comments? Why aren't we doing everything under one roof? So mm-hmm. maybe that message was heard, and that was something in 3.0. Maybe my only potential criticism here, and maybe this is because this is only guidance. I just want to mm-hmm. make sure our listeners caught that when Safe Greg put that out in the beginning. This isn't mandatory, you know, regulations that need to be followed. This is only guidance. And I think what's good is it's great. We'll talk about it, how it expands into different modes, like commercial trucking brings in things like communications. But I'm still worried that we're still only at the bullet point talking level. Mm-hmm. And we're not digging more into the weeds of how do we actually set up the foundations, legal and policy, that are needed to support the safe and effective operation of automated vehicles. And that probably comes with, you know, talking about the bills moving through Congress, and maybe that is something that's forthcoming with all the different notices for comment that are going to be coming out. So we'll see.
Oh, and I'll say, I think that also comes from the pilots and the pilots, you know, taking place and the pilots being completed and then actually having the learnings from it. You know, it's what's tough about this technology is that, you know, we both want it to be ready now and the rules all have to be in place, right, and all that, but we're also very much putting it together and learning a lot, and you know, people, the closer you get into this, the more you realize that there's kind of two realities, one of what is being pitched and what is possible, mm-hmm, and one of what is actually taking place at the ground level and kind of behind the press releases. Mm-hmm. Not that it's a smoke and mirrors, right, but in that you are, you know, presenting what your goal is, but it is a endless series of weird edge cases and someone tweaking it and then trying it and so mm-hmm, and I think that makes it difficult from the policy side too. You know, so much changes every year from where, you know, what's the future now, that it makes
it... Is
this
the future? No, it's now.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. Remember how, like, dockless bike share was going to change the world, and I don't think you can find a dockless bike that is not, you know, just a regular pedal bike anymore.
I haven't seen one in D.C. for a long time.
Yeah. And so, I mean, understand that, again, this is NHTSA.
Yeah.
A quick rulemaking used to take 7 years, mm-hmm, and that was for technology that has been around for 30 years and right, and heavily data, you know, data backed and all of that. So I do think that it's smart to have flexibility. Mm-hmm. It can be frustrating, but, you know, again, I agree with you. You do want to see with each iteration, at least, and each of these conferences that we're digging, you know, there's sub bullets now from the top line bullets.
Right. And on that point, I think we can jump into sort of what the document does, and that, you know, this is a multimodal document. USDOT's goal was, as BBNK Greg said, sort of this one USDOT philosophy of having all automation across trucks and buses and passenger vehicles. To be integrated under one sort of policy framework and philosophy. And in that sense, what USDOT did on Roman numeral 5 of 3.0 was list their automation principles. Number one being safety, safety first, safety last, safety always. Number two, remaining tech neutral, so ensuring that we're not distorting what the development path of these vehicles is going to be, but instead encouraging each type, these innovators to experiment with different types of sensors and computers and not really set prescriptive standards yet. Number three was modernizing regulations. They did this through changing some interpretations of existing regulations, like the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. That's underway, as well as interpretations across the department. So now when USDOT is interpreting its regulations, they will no longer consider the driver of a vehicle to always mean a human driver. It could be the computer, an automated driving system, that is. It could be the human actually in the car, or it can be someone remotely operating the vehicle, or maybe even something you haven't even thought of yet.
Dogs,
right.
Side note, I think I've said this multiple times, my dream of a perfect day is, you know, being stressed out, trapped, and having my dog show up in an automated car and ping me and say, come down and take me to the park, quit working, let's go outside, it's a nice day. Anyways, just, and it maybe a second side note, did people see the article around the dog in Seattle that takes the bus to the dog park?
No.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
Fair hopper, as I like to call it.
Hey, he's providing a service. He's also potentially comforting riders that may be stressed out and congested.
I think he's padding.
It's not always about money. It can be in-kind benefits.
He's padding their BTS stats is what he's doing.
Anyway. I think you're being a little rough on him.
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. Back.
Throw me a bone, guys. Yeah. Anyways, last time here. I think that service should be called in Uber. It should be the rollover boy service. Yeah. I'll move on.
But let's stick on that point though, just because I think that's important. I mean, that's one of the big takeaways is, mm-hmm, that language on in 3.0 that says states that USDOT will interpret and consistent with all applicable notice and comment requirements, adapt the definition to driver and operator to recognize that such terms do not refer exclusively to a human,
yep,
but may include an automated system.
So right. I guess my two questions there. One, can you just do that? And secondly, didn't they already do that in a response to Waymo, but then Google, letter for interpretation? I think it was pre-switch to, yeah, Waymo. Like, they were saying, hey, here's the issue. And there was a letter that kind of came out either by FOIA or something well after the fact. Yeah. And it was like, oh, by the way, DOT's already done this.
It was the request for exemption.
Like, this is like the
Google
Ermson.
Sent in for the,
yeah, like the Chris Ermson days.
Yeah, they sent it in 2011, 2012. And what ended up happening was, so Google's Firefly, the original sort of bug-looking car, what Google wanted to do was design these without brakes, steering wheels, gas pedals. And with the way that the current motor vehicle standards are written, they're very prescriptive. They say that the brakes have to be controlled by a foot pedal. And so Google said, well, what if we just get creative and we have a foot pedal and we change the amount of force that's required, which is really defined in there, but we just have the robot do it. And NHTSA came back and said, well, I don't know if we can exactly pull it that way. So there was this real lack of clarity there. I think that's really what they're trying to solve. But this also helps for trucks, too, because currently trucking regulations say that you have to have a human driver in the truck. And so all these companies like Starsky Robotics and Too Simple, whenever they're testing automated trucks right now, they can't cross state lines.
Because then it becomes interstate
commerce. It becomes interstate commerce, right. And there's also this interesting thing now, too, where interstate commerce is also considered sometimes to be any vehicle that goes on the road. So there's all these weird questions that I think that USDOT is trying to solve.
So the truckers were the big winners of that,
right,
clarification there, because that was just such a big issue, mm-hmm, that was out there. And they're not covered by anything going on in Congress right now. So that was a huge win for the AV trucking, mm-hmm, world.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the big things that we should be looking at, is because some of the biggest potential for reducing fuel consumption, for increasing efficiency, and just for making truckers' lives better, lies in trucking. I mean, these are the things that we should be preparing for. Number four, and that's sort of similar, was encouraging a consistent regulatory and operational environment. This means helping transit agencies and trucking companies and the city DOTs to really figure out, okay, and to know, you know, how they should be preparing for AVs and how they should be overseeing AV operation. Number five was proactively preparing for automation. This includes things like the Federal Transit Administration's Strategic Transit Automation Research Plan, the STAR Plan, which we will jump into in a little bit. And number six, and I just really love this one, I think Greg's going to have some feelings about this one, we will protect and enhance the freedoms enjoyed by Americans. There is a sort of this allusion to human drivers and not taking the steering wheel away, which I think, you know, no one thinks that the steering wheel is going to be taken away from anyone in 5 or 10 years. And our friend Alex Roy of the Autonicast is ensuring that with the Human Driving Association.
Big driver is really came in with the lobbying muscle to pull that one.
Right. But I really thought that this was a fantastic document, and that they didn't go too far in, you know, creating prescriptive standards around technology, because we don't know where we are yet.
That's never been the issue.
Right.
Did it go far? Is there enough in there that isn't, you know, we're advancing this while also, you know, number one, as always with anything from DOT, is that safety is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that there is enough in this that safe operations is ensured while also being flexible and innovative, mm-hmm, and all of that?
I don't think we're going to guarantee that safety is completely ensured until the technology is fully mature. I mean, there will always be inherent safety risks, and I think that's one of the reasons that we have to have that proactive communication between NHTSA and developers. And
is that proactive communication required?
That practice.
Again, that was a beautiful strong in there. No, nothing will be 100% safe. Did this do anything to, you know, mm-hmm, to take the one known, you know, major fatality of incident that, you know, while that might not be 100% preventable? Was anything, you know, are there things in here that mm-hmm. can improve that, whether it's, you know, whether it's Uber, Waymo, or anyone we know, or the 50 other companies to come between now and 4.0?
Right. Well, that's a big question, right? Because currently, only four companies have submitted these voluntary assessments, and it's us asking for. And there are at least 55 companies testing AVs in California. What does that tell us? That it can't just be USDOT. We need congressional action. We need Congress to require these companies to be communicating with NHTSA and with USDOT.
Could DOT require it if this document said you are required?
I believe that DOT could exercise statutory authority to do it. But I'm not a lawyer.
They could also say...
I'm definitely not USDOT's counsel.
They could also be like, hey, listen, you're welcome to apply for exemptions without having submitted a voluntary safety assessment. Those will take the standard 10 to 15 years. So the having a voluntary safety assessment significantly speeds up your ability to do that.
Right.
But at the same time, we've read these safety assessments and...
Right. And the safety assessments too, I mean, these are meant to be consumer and public facing documents, right? I mean, all these automakers are doing a lot of communication, and even the tech firms, and now they're realizing they have to do communication behind the scenes with NHTSA. And all the technical details are being shared there for the most part.
Yeah.
Cool. But let's jump into some of the fun stuff. Greg, do you have some stuff you want to jump into?
Yeah, so I think these all complement some of the pointers that you just said, and should probably provide some lively discussion here around, you know, I like Pete's question of, did this document go far enough? And yeah, I think it's good guidance, but, mm-hmm. you know, we're eventually going to need to drill down to make sure that we do, or think it through the proper risk mitigation, and that everyone feels comfortable deploying, mm-hmm. I think, within the vision that 3.0 wants to get to. So the first thing is, and I think this gets to that discussion that you all were just talking about, is there's still a focus on self-certification.
Yeah.
I think Secretary Chao made that clear in her statements during the event. But the question is, what are we self-certifying to? Mm-hmm. And I think we've all been asking that question for 3 years now. So then it becomes a question of, how do we develop these minimum safety standards for AVs, knowing that any sort of modification of the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards will take 7 to 10 years. So with that in mind, that's why one of the things that's forthcoming is a notice of proposed rulemaking mm-hmm. related to potentially streamlining that process. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, there are a lot of people with some ideas, and I'll be interested to see that. The challenge is going to be, how do you still have a process that's efficient but also transparent mm-hmm. that allows for public comments in accordance with the Administrative Procedure Act. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you get around that. So it's going to, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Right.
One thing that I've been focused on, and going back to this idea of, how do we ensure minimum safety of automated vehicles? So a lot of us read the announcement this week from Waymo that they've have 10 million miles of driving within on public roads. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was more interesting that they announced they have 7 billion miles of simulated driving. Mm-hmm. And if you look at 3.0, it says that simulations may be a new way. And I thought this was interesting. They said to test mm-hmm. the safety of vehicles.
Right.
It's almost like a driving test, but it will be simulation based.
But that seems to be...
You still can play to the test.
But USDOT, in my mind, isn't mm-hmm. testing vehicles. They're rating their safety. So is that a misuse of words, where that seems to go beyond self-certification?
Rating safety is in like the new car assessment program, like
crashworthiness.
Read it. They laid it out. Like, there's two ways that you can, and it was alluding to how you can be sure. You can basically set up a jungle gym, you know, kind of a physical, an M-City type, you know, mm-hmm. a world, and run it there to demonstrate it. Or you can create the kind of Sims world and run it there as a way of validating it.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So, I mean, I think it was advancing, you know, the question of simulated miles and all of that from a validation and verification and you know, proving right. are these safe. You know, everyone's still trying to figure that out. And I know enough to be dangerous, but I think that it's very difficult to produce a real-world driving test that's not very much, you know, you can create things that can literally only do that.
Right.
That I think this is a, I think at least advances that industry, because I know there's a lot of the many kind of stacks of companies and business models in this line, one of them now being the simulated testing mm-hmm. world, and that there's going to be kind of a dual part, A, on development of the testing, but then there's going to, from a regulatory side, how do we know that these things are safe, that from the regular side, being able right. to either have their own testing type stuff, but mm-hmm. also to be able to have that for getting data that is useful.
Right.
So I think that's interesting. I mean, that's good development.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and on Pete's note too, I was going to say, you know, there's definitely a difference between simulation and validation too, and that's one of the things we got to look at, is when we're validating systems, it's very different from setting up a simulation sort of environment. If you're doing it digitally, or if you're doing it by just real testing center simulation, so that's going to be one of the interesting things to see, is how are these newer companies that are popping up that are doing validation. How are they going to execute that?
And then on simulations, I think one thing is going to be really interesting, just one more point, is I think simulations are not only good for validating, testing, whatever you want to call it, but also for public outreach. Because mm-hmm. there's only so many AVs on the road today that people are able to get into. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be an opportunity to, one, introduce the technology to the public, mm-hmm. and also at the local level, introduce it to some lawmakers that may be, you know, squeamish about technology or concerned.
That's interesting, because I want to pull on that thread. So do you think that by perhaps, you know, someone like Waymo going to a city and saying, okay, we want to test here, and then showing like multiple run-throughs of simulation software to address questions, say that, you know, city council member says, well, what are you going to do for pedestrians if they're crossing an unmarked crosswalk? So they could go in, they could show like multiple simulations and keep on running it through and change the variables each time, right?
I think that's right, man. I think it's an opportunity, but it's also, it you know, just to put on a lawyer hat, I'd also be concerned about, you know, over-promising in that public meeting.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, it's going to work exactly like the simulation right. does, and it's not going to hit anybody.
Mm-hmm. Or like any of the videos we see from AV developers, they get to pick which video they right. show us, and that applies to simulations. If there's anyone out there at one of the companies or startups that is doing the AV simulation tech, mm-hmm. reach out to us. We would yeah. love to have you on the show.
Absolutely.
And really just we'd love to shut up and learn mm-hmm. the details here. So please reach out to us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
At Mobility Podcast.
Maybe, so another piece mm-hmm. that I think is really interesting is this discussion around connectivity.
Yeah.
So I think that's an exciting new thing mm-hmm. That's coming out of 3.0. And so, of course, it has, you know, another talking point of Secretary Chao is we want to be tech neutral.
Right.
And so for those of us that have been thinking about, you know, V2V, vehicle to vehicle, vehicle to infrastructure, or vehicle to everything, which is V2X, you know, a lot of us are thinking autonomous and connected should potentially be together. And it was interesting. So the language from 3.0 on page 13 says, it's important, connectivity is an important complementary technology, but should not be, and realistically cannot be, a precondition to deployment of automated vehicles. So I you know, I read that to kind of be an acknowledgement that connectivity is going to be important, but two mm-hmm. issues that we're going to be delving on in a couple episodes mm-hmm. forthcoming, talking about intelligent transportation systems and connectivity, but two issues arise. One, there isn't a clear technology that's been picked yet, chosen
yeah.
amongst the auto companies and kind of the all the industry that's working around connectivity, because there's a difference between 5G and dedicated short-range communication, DSRC.
Mm-hmm. And I want to clarify that 5G / CV2X for cellular V2X communication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other issue I think that a lot of people are concerned about is car companies, software companies, whoever's putting out automated vehicles don't want to wait for the connected infrastructure to be built by cities.
Right.
Because we still have potholes right now. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, that's the thing too, is, you know, connectivity just is not a foregone conclusion with automated vehicles, or at least interoperability for the communication systems the vehicles are using. Because we have Toyota, which I believe went with DSRC as their preferred means of communication. DSRC has been around for about 20 years. We set the spectrum aside, the 5.9 gigahertz band, in 1999, I believe. And now the telecoms want a chunk of that. And they're saying, well, we could use cellular communications because also you'll get the benefit of being able to watch Netflix in your car with their vehicles talking on that band instead. But the problem is that cellular V2X just is not ready yet. And we're not sure when it'll be ready. But DSRC is there and is ready and has really low latency, so we know we can use that for safety communication. So it's a fascinating issue, and unfortunately no one's really taking initiative to make sure that we connect vehicles. I think statistics is we can reduce up to 80% of non-impaired crashes can be reduced by a vehicle-to-vehicle communication.
It was funny because reading it, there was an earlier part where they get into, you know, there are a lot of communication technologies, but for whatever, you know, for any of our purposes, we are assuming that none of them, we are at no point assuming they will be ubiquitous.
Right.
And I was like, ooh, that sucks for the DSRC crowd. Yeah. But then later on, it gets in and they're like, hey, listen, we will fight to protect the spectrum, right, and all that. I was like, okay.
And that was decisive. I mean, that wasn't fully decisive. It wasn't the decision making we need.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Because there was some kind of confusion, I guess you could say, about the DOT's commitment to the 5.9 gigahertz spectrum and to DSRC in general. So that is, I think, a good, you know, reaffirming their support to it. And I do think it's a good policy that if we were to design saying, well, obviously everyone's going to do DSRC, and then it's not, that would be kind of the opposite of tech neutral. But for something like this, it is important to have DOT dedicated to the fight, because there is a policy. That's a policy kind of jurisdictional battle.
Totally. And just to illustrate this for folks who are unfamiliar with sort of how this works, the value of having connected vehicle is that AVs are still just going to be able to sense and see what's around them using their sensors. They can't see around corners. They don't have the magic ability to see through walls. But what DSRC and other communications technology allows is, let's say you're going into an intersection, you can't see who's coming from the other side around the corner. But if you have DSRC and other communications technologies, you can know if a car is about to run a red light, and you can get that notification. That's going to reduce a lot of collisions by allowing that to see around objects.
Also, that whole snow thing.
The whole snow thing, too, since AV sensors can't have a lot of trouble with snow. Pete, anything interesting you wanted to sort of pick out here?
Yeah, so there's a couple. One that I found interesting, and that ties into the conversations about the AV Start Act that's going on, you know, that's still inching through Congress, and that's a kind of another conversation. But, you know, as it relates to the issue of preemption and what states or cities and local governments can and can't do, there was some interesting guidance on to local transit operators, but also to local governments. The first one I'll talk about as it relates to preemption is that it says to consider how land use, including curb space, will be affected. Mm-hmm. It then goes on to talk about consider the potential for increased congestion, and that, you know, the need for to consider appropriate policies to manage the potential for increased congestion. That is the kind of, to me at least, the ball game, and the reason that the preemption question is important is, where do these things come in? Because a lot of the levers of local government that relate to how do you manage that congestion are the parts that I am still waiting to see clarity in, whatever magical new language is being worked out by people like Greg behind doors that might come out to address that, because so much of that is pricing, so much of that is lane and area access.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of the things that go into regulating the for-hire industry are now going to, how does that apply to a for-hire vehicle industry where the vehicle is the operator, you know? And so if there's that ambiguity is where, you know, it's funny to me, because then it's like, oh, and by the way, cities should really definitely consider this, because they're going to need some big policies as far as where you can and can't drop things off, and how do you avoid you know, you and I owning an AV and sending it around the block all day while we're at work.
Well, that's a good point because, look, I mean, with AV SART, at least, the federal government does not want to be handling curb pricing, does not want to be handling curb designations, don't want to be handling traffic laws. Like, that is a city and a state thing, and USDOT is going to stay as far away from that as they can. I mean, they want to lend support. But I think on the note that you brought up, which is really interesting, I think that cities could benefit from their own sort of 3.0 sort of approach of redoing their interpretations to say, yes, Taxi Limousine Commission does control human-driven taxis, limousines, regulates them. They can revise their regulations to say, to include automated vehicles in that, because that's still well within their authority. And I think really it's it'd be prudent to start looking at ways of doing that. Because I don't see federal preemption touching that at all. And we've been really careful with AV START to ensure that, you know, state, local authorities are preserved.
And, you know, the other place that preemption comes up in 3.0, for those of you interested in this issue, page 6, it makes it clear and says, preemptive force does not extend to speed limits, which is interesting. We were talking mm-hmm. about this before the show, about, well, yeah, of course the federal government doesn't want, you know, to take away that authority from local governments. And I think speed limits is an interesting choice of words, whereas I know a lot of, you know, some of the larger cities we prefer that to say does not extend to traffic laws,
mm-hmm.
Because I think that's a little broader. So
right, but it says not extend to state and local traffic laws, such as speed limits.
Oh, all right.
Yep, we got it. They
Good.
Nailed it.
Good.
But I think that's a really important point, though, because this is something that keeps on coming up with AV START. There's all this concern about cities being able to exercise their authorities over traffic laws, but there'll be levers that cities can pull, like saying, can't have AVs in like a school zone or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's still well within their authorities.
I think the debate that I've been using out there is going back to the, you know, of course, the unfortunate accident in Phoenix, Tempe mm-hmm. area.
The crash.
The fatality, which is really unfortunate. If AV START had passed,
mm-hmm.
could Governor Ducey have pulled all the vehicles off the road
mm-hmm.
because arguably he pulled them for safety reasons?
Certainly. Well, you can already do that. In a lot of states, you can already do that, say, if you're not maintaining a vehicle properly, like the New York State crash recently.
Are we not treading into the recall authority of NHTSA
that
acting administrator King talked about during the release of 3.0, made it very right. clear, you know, we're going to exercise our recall authority.
Certainly.
And would that have triggered a recall?
Well, it would have triggered definitely an investigation. NHTSA has, in the past, instructed manufacturers to immediately recall all vehicles, with do not drive notifications.
After every single incident? Because usually when you see things like
right.
the ignition, you know, GM ignition, anything
right.
of this, it usually has to get up into the mid double digits
yeah.
before anything is recognized.
Right, and that issue is, of course, statistical significance, which is, you know, a problematic way to look at this in the first place. But they do have the authority in a lot of ways to that they can exercise quickly.
And I think, you know, I don't think there's a perfect answer.
Yeah,
I think we're just having totally. A discussion. And I think I'm just trying to get to the issue around why people
yeah.
are very sensitive around preemption.
Right.
So
and
Boston,
I think we have to be very careful what we ask for.
So, right. so after the crash in Tempe, Boston said, I need everyone to pull their... Was it Boston, correct? That it said, I need everyone to pull this off and have a momentary pause.
I think Pittsburgh did it too.
Yeah,
I think a lot of cities that had any sort of testing were very concerned.
And states have pretty broad authorities to revoke registrations of vehicles and impound vehicles, I believe. So there are certainly levers that they can pull.
Yeah, but I mean, the question he's asking, though, is...
But would it be...
That's right now, if AV START were in law.
Right. And as AV START is written, I don't think that it would have been the case, or at least whatever final thing we end up with will have resolved this.
That sounds good. And the other word that I thought was interesting in 3.0 is... So we've been talking about safety and performance
yeah.
kind of separately. There's always an and. Now it says safety performance. So I think that's something new.
We'll be a safe performance.
I'm going to look at some cases this weekend to see where I find safety performance and how that's going to be interpreted in the future. Anyways, but I think that goes back to the term that you and I were laughing about with cooperative automation.
Yeah. I've actually put it in big highlighted quotes.
What is cooperative automation? And maybe that is, you know, this future that 3.0 is hoping for.
I'm picturing like those, when they show the video from like the Amazon warehouse where it's just like the 50 different little robots that are all going full speed.
Right, and they talk about cooperative automation as, you know, platooning with AVs and how the complementary technologies like connected vehicle stuff. And so this does show how much of a broad look at that DOT is taking at this. I do want to talk about, and this is something that that I think is one of the most important and exciting parts of this, is DOT has been working a lot on the disability, for the issues of people with disabilities. There are a few cutout sections that talked about the advantages of people with disabilities. They talk about how universal design could be an important part of this, making sure that vehicles are accessible for people with disabilities. And one really, really exciting thing here is this is also tied in with what DOT is doing on studying the impact on the workforce for automated vehicles. You know, SAFE did some recent research on this and found that overall the impacts on the workforce would be marginal and the benefits are far going outweigh the costs, but that we do need to be prepared for this transition. And this was referenced in DOT's recent request for comments in the Federal Register. They talked about how they're going to look at how automated vehicles can help people with disabilities get to work, how it can help communities that are traditionally underserved by transit, but also what are the impacts going to be on truckers and bus drivers. And I think that was a really important step, especially since they're partnering with the Department of Labor on this. So it's these interagency movements that we're seeing a lot at DOT, which I think is great.
Actually, on that, on the accessibility, I was actually impressed by the amount of attention they paid to it. You know, for a Republican administration to continue to hammer that is a very good sign. And I would also say, I think going to another thing that I wanted to highlight is some of the advice and guidance to transit operators. One of them they talked about was to really focus on needs-based implementation, like not
novelty, not tech for tech situation.
Mm-hmm. And one of the like overwhelming biggest needs that this technology has as a potential, and other kind of non-AV, but you know the TNCs and all that, is to address paratransit.
Yeah.
Not only current, you know, from a budgetary and operational and user experience. But you know, looking at the kind of the silver wave of retirements and, and an aging population, this is a real issue.
Yeah,
and that's somewhere where you know, accessibility is key.
Yeah,
and it's not, you know, it's more than, you know, it's a, there's a lot of elements to that, and I think from a cost saving standpoint, unless you're able to do the full process, meaning requesting. You know, the loading, securement of a wheelchair, you know, being able to load and all that with someone who is blind or deaf, all of the, if all of that's not in there and there's still a human operator needed, then you just have the same exact system with really expensive vehicles.
Right. But
and so I think that's one area where like DOT, you know, when you talk about, we talked earlier about the, you know, dumping money into testing, AVs right now is not the best use of the money for the federal government. Like, there is plenty of private money.
Yeah.
But the accessibility side of this is key. And that's something that we know, you know, somewhat understandably is not, or not, actually, no, I don't want to say that. It's not understandable, but is not in reality at the forefront of these companies that are all just trying to make a car drive itself, you know, everywhere or as many places as possible. That is, I definitely think, somewhere that there's a big focus, because it's not only for broader societal benefits and the and a good function of a market gap that DOT should play, but for the transit industry, this is something that is just a game changer potentially.
And I totally agree. I mean, paratransit service right now is lousy. You have to request 24 hours in advance. They have a 3-4 hour window when they're going to pick you up, maybe. And it costs cities way, way more than it should a lot of the time. So there's a real opportunity here, if it's done properly, for number one, offering more service and better service, hopefully, but also allowing people who are previously the drivers to be able to focus on helping out the passengers and the customer service aspects. I know we're running out of time here. Do we want to jump into the proving grounds stuff real quick?
Well, maybe, yeah. Let's do that, yeah. And then I have a kind of theoretical question at the end.
Yeah. Well, great. So USDOT, right at the end of Obama's administration, created the USDOT Autonomous Vehicle Proving Grounds. It's 10 designated proving grounds from coast to coast. They were rushed out in the twilight hours, the Obama administration, and got a lot of flack for it. And then in this version, in 3.0, they said that these were dissolved.
I wouldn't say they were rushed, but they were expedited and announced right before, you know, prior to leaving.
Right.
So it wasn't a shoddy system. It was just made sure it was done in that administration.
Right.
It's not disbanded, no longer recognized.
Yeah, no longer recognized. Well, it's just like, on my phone, I have a signature saying, please excuse brevity, tied to my mobile phone. That's basically what USDOT did when they designated those. So what's your guys' thoughts on this? Because they talked about having advanced notice proposed rulemaking on a new sort of testing program. Do you have any sort of takeaways on that, Greg or Pete?
Yeah, sure. So, we have clients that are coupled to designated proving grounds. And of course, there's a little bit of disappointment in that they are no longer recognized. And I think, you know, it's important to realize that when the proving grounds were selected, it was very clear that there was no federal funding tied to them mm-hmm. when you applied. But I think a lot of other people that applied were expecting, okay, if we get designated as a proving ground, the next logical step would be funding, would be flowing to us.
Or at least bonus points in any grant, you know, competitive grant program.
Right, at least something.
Yeah.
Right. So with that point in mind, just because the USDOT proving grounds are no longer recognized, mm-hmm. they are probably still very well positioned mm-hmm. to apply under this current pilot program, because if anybody has a proving ground within their region or has seen the work that's being done, there is a lot of great partnerships that have been formed. There's a lot of good investment that's being done. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the great things about the proving grounds is, one, there are different regions across the country. And two, there are different types. So, for example, in California, you have Contra Costa Transportation Authority, which has a testing area, Gomentum Station, which is associated with Contra Costa Transportation Authority. That's a testing site, which is doing a lot of good stuff in a controlled environment. Versus the San Diego Association of Governments, which is a USDOT or a former proving ground, which is doing testing in the city of Chula Vista, and so those are two different testing environments. And I think, you know, all of us probably agree that the only way we get the testing right is to have a diverse mm-hmm. way of testing across different modes, across different operational environments, and taking advantage of all the great work that's being done across the country, not only at the local government level, but at the state level, but at the academic level, and all the private companies that are doing work in this area.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting too that what they said was they don't want to be picking winners and losers because there is all of that great work and investment going on. I was actually in M-City, I was at M-City with University of Michigan on Thursday. And I do want to give those folks a shout out because they're just doing incredible work on automated vehicles and connected vehicles. And thanks to a self-driving Twitter friend, Greg McGuire at M-City, for giving me the first ride in the Navy. Took a while, but it was amazing to see some of the stuff they're doing with augmented reality in testing the AVs too. So there's just such amazing things going on across the country in testing these.
And so hopefully what happens there, because one of the things in the proving grounds and the opportunity that went out and what people apply for is there's supposed to be information that's gathered and shared with USDOT and then create best practices. Mm-hmm. So hopefully in, you know, this next iteration of the pilot program with the, you know, notice and comment period is out right now on that mm-hmm. Over the next 45 days, hopefully whatever comes of that and the, you know, notice of opportunity comes around, this new pilot program that's being developed still has that, I think, data sharing element to provide best practices for communities that may not be awarded a pilot program.
I think that was one of the great things too, is that DOT has created sort of this framework for the data sharing. I can see there being a really important role for them to play on having this nationwide consortium of the companies testing, the cities and states working on this, and companies like INRIX, like our friend Avery Ash, who's recently with us, showing sort of the data they're collecting and what the impacts of it could be. What else was there, guys? Anything else that blew you away?
In scanning it now, looking for something else, I came across that I like and I found very interesting was in the guidance for for transit agencies, AV 3.0 highlights complete streets.
Yes, which was great.
I love that it's in the transit agency, like that's your effing problem, not. And that wasn't in the, you know, that wasn't in the guidance of the local governments of this is a, you know, complete streets are an important way of separating multimodal transportation and improving safety. But
right.
I like that it was in there. To Greg's point earlier, that it really does mirror the request for comments and the input that was received over the last year. I think to that point, you see that a lot. I think the reason accessibility is so is prevalent and is focused on in here is because the accessibility community reached out and was was heard, and likewise with truckers and platooning and DSRC for sure.
Absolutely.
And so I think my big takeaway from this is that if you're not getting your voice out there and just sitting back assuming this is all just gonna, you know, policies are gonna get made and they're gonna be done well or it doesn't matter, like it does.
Yeah.
And if you look at the very back page of the document, that it says, you know, the AV 3.0 is the beginning of a national discussion about the future of our surface transportation system. Your voice is essential to shaping the future.
So file comments.
I think that there's a lot of companies, you know, like we talked about, there's 50-something companies that have the California DMV permits. There are not 50-something companies providing their input on these documents. And unfortunately, if whatever your policy focus, or if you disagree with this document and didn't comment, it's kind of like voting and complaining.
Right.
But worse, because you actually have a lot more influence here. So that would be my big takeaway, is that make your voice heard.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, let me go through the upcoming comments
and
things that we're expecting, and then my last theoretical question maybe we can end on.
Perfect.
So the automated vehicles 3.0, that currently has a 60-day comment period, and that ends December 7th. So you can look at the webpage and see the docket number and how to comment. For this new opportunity for comment related to the pilot program, and this, I think, is to provide input to USDOT on what the pilot program should look like. Those comments are due November 23rd, which is unfortunately the day after Thanksgiving. So some of us may have to... the one on the pilot programs. It's a 45-day comment period, and so it's due the day after Thanksgiving. Interesting for those who want an analogy to maybe what this might look like, if you look at the drone integration pilot program that was put out by the FAA, I think a lot of people expect this pilot program to be similar.
Mm-hmm.
And right now in this document, it doesn't say that a local government has to lead any sort of team related to an application, which was seen in the drone integration pilot program. So that'll be interesting to see if that is something that's commented on.
Mm-hmm.
And then correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think we're expecting a opportunity for comment around streamlining the exemption process.
Yes, I believe we are.
We're expecting an opportunity for comments related to automated driving systems and commercial vehicles.
Mm-hmm. There were two FMCSA RFCs earlier this year. Those comments are available online.
That's what informed this
FMCSA section.
And I think there's another one forthcoming related to more, I think, maybe operational aspects.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be an update to the Uniform Traffic Control Devices Manual. I'm not sure what type of, you know, notice and comment period that's going to have, but there's probably going to be a working group that's designated and moving forward. I know there's already is one, but I don't know if there's going to be a separate one created for this automation component.
Yeah, I imagine it'll be.
The MUGCD crowd loves a good subcommittee.
Let's create a committee, discuss the possibility of maybe looking at this.
And then I think the other thing everybody's anticipating is a notice of funding opportunity.
There's a lot of money
sitting
in a safe that I'm guessing is in either Derek or Finch's office. It's cash. I worked at DOT today. It is all cash business.
It's all cash money. They hand you a suitcase when you get awarded the grant.
I thought it was in Bitcoin.
Because there's $100 million that USDOT was given in this most recent omnibus bill, I believe in March, $60 million was for HAVs, level SAE levels 3 to 5. $40 million was for lower levels of automation, I believe. And then there's another $10 million for the workforce study.
All right, so lots, as Pete said, lots of opportunities to make your voices heard, and we always encourage that.
But again, if you see the comments that were received earlier this year on these, you know, it started with, hey, we're going to do 3.0, it's going to be multimodal, and then each mode put out a comment thing, and then those comments really, really did inform what goes into 3.0. There will be a 4.0, and it will be molded by the comments they receive for each of these things. The pilots that they are going to do will be molded by the comments that they receive this. So please make your voices heard.
Yeah, and we'll in the show notes for this, we'll point to the existing docket numbers, and you can look at the existing comments that are already out there to see what's been said and maybe what you think is missing. So my last question is going back to, you know, infamous number 6 of the points for moving forward. We will protect and enhance the freedoms enjoyed by Americans.
The Sixth Amendment.
Sixth Amendment.
So, I mean, that...
Of automation.
It's of automation. Of AV.
United States automation.
I'm not surprised by the language based on the current administration. My kind of theoretical question is, can cars and autonomous vehicles coexist? Because that's essentially what this statement is saying.
And that's the goal, right? They want to not take the wheel away from anyone, but you should be able to take an AV if you want, right?
And the two should hold hands, have cooperative automation, and operate safely. And I think a lot of us question, just based on what you hear about bullying of automated cars, you know, concerns about automated vehicles following the law versus humans that are driving manual vehicles don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that a world that can continue to coexist forever, or is that more of a short-term thing, or should we potentially be thinking about not allowing people to own cars anymore?
As Alex Ray would say, out of my cool dead hands.
Right.
No, because not only I don't think that AVs provide the benefit or much less any type of cost benefit in every community. There is no automated on-demand service in a very rural area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really no super benefit to, like, why am I going to buy my own AV if there's no traffic and there's no, you know, I'm the only car on most roads that I drive. And I just, so from that standpoint, I think, but even more importantly, even in city environments, we're not trying to force everyone into automated vehicles. Because we're not only trying to get, you know, many in the kind of smarter transportation movement are also trying to get people onto bikes and scooters and pedestrians. Mm-hmm. And those are all human. And those are, and particularly when it's bikes and scooters and whatever pods are next, there's going to have to be that. So, I mean, I do think that things like complete streets are important. But, you know, one of the companies that's down in Texas got in a lot of trouble when their CEO made a PR blunder comment about, we're really going to have to retrain humans to interact with AVs. And that's just not the way it's going to be.
And we saw this before. Actually, that rhetoric was actually initially used when cars were coming onto the road. And all this is where Jaywalker came from, was in the early 1900s.
So what you're saying is we actually can train the humans.
I'm saying we should learn lessons from the past.
It's all about branding and shaming humans. Got it.
Well, look, we really screwed up the first automobile revolution. We bulldozed neighborhoods, low-income communities. We didn't account for people with disabilities and those who wouldn't be able to drive. Those who weren't able-bodied, and we prioritized the car over everything else. And this is actually an opportunity with AVs and all these new things happening to get it right in the second automobile revolution. Let's not screw up as bad as we did before. TM.
Yeah, and I think, if we can end this pretty soon, but I think the nice way for moving forward is, we've all talked about this, I think it's going to be all about infrastructure.
Correct.
And how do we build for the infrastructure of the future to support everything that we've been talking about, from dockless scooters to continue to have public transportation, to have automated vehicles, to have traditional manually driven vehicles the way we do today. In my mind, it all comes down to infrastructure, and I think that's going to be a big part of our kind of podcast focus moving forward, especially as the highway bill expires in 2020, which happens to be an election year, so expect an extension, and maybe 2021, right?
Maybe 2022, who knows? Well, I think that's actually a great place to leave it. We just barely scratched the surface on what 3.0, on everything that 3.0 covers. And as Finch Fulton has said very accurately, we're still just writing the alphabet. We're not ready to grade poetry yet when it comes to automated vehicles, which I thought was pretty apt. We're still figuring out what we should be doing in this space.
And I would argue maybe we shouldn't be relying on an old alphabet. And perhaps we should be writing a new language.
A new language.
That's what the MBUTCD update's for.
So, guys, what do you have going on right now in the next few weeks? And what are you looking forward to the rest of the year?
I'm headed back out to California again. dealing primarily at state and local levels right now, but am working a lot more at the federal level, not so much focused on AV Start right now, but on the plethora of other policy stuff that's coming up in the next Congress, because I think it's going to be an absolutely critical Congress, again, because of the reauthorization. It's the first one where all of this was a real thing, where we're doing a five-year bill. I mean, I remember when the FAST Act was being crafted, and while I was at Uber, and they came to us and they're like, what do you guys want in there? And we're like, I want to not be in that bill right now. I've got more than enough. So like, please, they're like, no, we want to help. I go, no, I get it. No.
The best thing that can happen in Washington is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So we're beyond that point now. And so there are both on the kind of today mobility tomorrow's mobility, much less the future of mobility. And so, you're seeing a lot of excitement around that. And so, again, it's a very important time to be talking to these staffers to make sure that they're aware of what's going on in the industry and what's potential and where the policies need to be.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Greg, what are you up to? And what's coming up the next few months?
I'll be working on comments, of course. So looking forward to writing those and coming up with some new issues, some of the things we talked about today. I'm heading out to the California Transit Association meeting, and we'll be talking about automated vehicles in the context of public transit. Working on a couple articles related to preemption, some of the other things that I talk about on this show. And, quite frankly, I'm looking forward to spending November and December and maybe actually hanging out with my wife a little bit, because both of us have been traveling a little too much. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to closing out the year with some family time.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. And I promised an AV Start update, and the update is this. Negotiations are still ongoing between Senate Commerce staff and all the stakeholders. And I would keep an eye out during lame duck to see what happens with that.
So in other words, the midterm elections got in the way.
There are a number of issues just with floor time is very limited. Majority Leader McConnell is very careful about how you're using time, because the Senate calendar is already stacked and they have a list of things the House has already sent them. And this is really just a procedural issue as we continue to work with other stakeholders on finding a path forward.
I like the move to force you to listen all the way through to get the big update. And I'm going to throw this out there. I think, do you have more on AV Start?
That's all I'm going to say for now.
Tune in next time. And I'm going to throw this out there. We haven't really talked about it, but I think we should put together a mobility podcast happy hour for the Hill folks now that they have nothing to do while they're waiting.
Y'all are just laying around, aren't you?
I think that would be. I think it would be great to get everyone together during the somewhat slow time, just to start continuing this conversation as we go forward. So yeah, I volunteered us for that. So
I think that'd be great.
Be on the lookout for that.
Absolutely, and especially since I've ran into some folks on the Hill who are listeners. So let us know if you are if you're interested. You know how to reach us. And so to wrap up, Pete, where can we find you online?
I am at Shared Mobility S. On Twitter, and also at Pete_Gould.
I never know which one to tag. Which one do you prefer? I can't tag
one. One has pictures. Much more gnats and general political banter.
I need to move that one.
The other one is much more focused and professional.
Right. What about you, Greg?
At Smarter Transpo.
All professional.
Right. All right, Greg's at Smarter Transpo. I'm at AV Greg R. And now I can finally proudly say that now that I've ridden in one. And
can I just really quickly on
yeah.
that? To talk about how far we have to go on public education and all that, the fact that, that you just wrote in your first one, I wrote in my first one a month or so ago, and this is like our world.
I've been doing this for 3.5 years, exactly. begging people exactly. to ride
so,
in one.
That's, you know, that's, I do think that's an important thing to keep in mind when we talk about, like, oh, everyone knows, it's like... Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work to go on that, and there are some great folks. I know down in Florida they're doing a ton with this. Grayson Berulty is doing a ton, but he's very focused on SAE. Mm-hmm. But it is important to keep that in mind that we're just even yeah. we are just getting to start.
This is at the beginning. I talk about educating the public, and still me, part of the public, still haven't written them.
Yeah.
Great. Well, you can so at AV Greg R is me. You can also follow us at Mobility Podcast. Or reach us at www.mobilitypodcast.com. Thank you all for joining, and keep in touch, and we'll talk to you soon.